Okay, good evening, everybody. It is such a great chizuk to be here to see this Beis Medrash in action. I heard so much about it, and it's really nice to see it firsthand. This week is an easy parsha to speak about when we talk about being mechazek Talmud Torah, because of course we are dealing with the parsha of Kabbalah Satorah. And in the lead up to Kabbalah Satorah, the Chumash seems to tell us something that's totally unnecessary. We have this concept that Dibra Torah Kalashim B'nai Adam. Sometimes the Torah speaks Kalashim B'nai Adam, but there are limits to that concept. Meaning the Torah doesn't just throw around words. The Torah doesn't just throw around words unnecessarily. And yet the Torah tells us Vayisu Merefidim. So we traveled from Rafidim and we came to Midbar Sinai. And Rashi on the spot quotes from Chazal that they were bothered. Why do we have to say again where they traveled from? We already know where they traveled from. We know that it was already written in last week's parsha that they were camping in Rafidim. So obviously that's where they were traveling from. If that's what that was their last stop, and then they traveled from the last stop. So that's the obvious kasha that Chazal asked, and Rashi quotes it. And Rashi gives the answer, and he tells us, Ella lahakish nisi asan mirafidim libi asan lemidbar Sinai. That there's a link between the traveling from Rafidim and the arrival in Midbar Sinai. Ma bi asan lemidbar Sinai b'tshuva, af nisi asan mirafidim b'tshuva. Just like when they came to Midbar Sinai, they came to receive the Torah, it was with a sense of tshuva that they approached Har Sinai, so too already, when they were leaving Rafidim, there was already this sense of tshuva, there was already this impassioned sense of trying to become better, of trying to return to the Ribbono Shel'Olam, of trying to become closer to the Ribbono Shel'Olam. So the Torah is teaching us that just as it is clear that when we arrive at Har Sinai, it's with an attitude of having done tshuva, an eagerness to accept the Torah, so too when we leave for feed him, that same eagerness, that same attitude is there. The Netziv comments that it's a question and it's an answer, but whenever you see a question and an answer, you always have to ask yourself, does the answer really answer the question? Meaning, I get, Q and A, but is the A an answer to that question? It's an answer to some question, maybe, but does it really answer the question that Rashi came to answer? Doesn't really. If the Pasuk is teaching that they'd already been doing tshuva when they left Rafidim, we still need to explain why that's important to know. Meaning, Rashi's asking, why is it that the Torah is telling us this? So, is it important to know exactly when the Hirhurei tshuva, when the first acts of tshuva, the first move toward tshuva happened? Does it my nafkamina whether it happened when they were in Rafidim or it happened only when they arrive at Midbar Sinai? Meaning there still has to be a limud over here. What's the limud in terms of the timing? Why is the timing something that's so significant? So the Netziv, as many of you know, he has a way of finding beautiful Musar in the Psukim and the Mamari Chazal. There's a certain neshama to the Torah that the Netziv had a unique capability of finding, of uncovering for us, of exposing to us. They say that when the Chavetz Chaim introduced the learning of Musar in Radin, the Talmidim asked the Chavetz Chaim, why do we need to learn Musar? In Volozhin, they didn't have a Musar Seder. So why should we have to have a Musar Seder in Radin? What do we need a Musar Shmuz? What do we need a Musar Seder for? The father of all the yeshivas in Volozhin, they didn't have Musar. And the Chavetz Chaim said, yeah, of course they didn't have Musar in Volozhin, because they got to see the Netziv say Ahava Rabba every day. So you didn't need a Musar Seder in Volozhin, because if you saw the Netziv say Ahava Rabba, you don't have to learn Musar. And that's part of the message of the Shalshalas HaMasorah of Volozhin that's lost on us. Sometimes we think of our Masorah, let's call it. Our Masorah in Yiddishkeit is like, very intellectual, almost like it's a cold Masorah. That's not our Masorah. Our Masorah has a warmth to it, it has a passion to it, it has an energy to it. That's our Masorah. We are coming up on the first yard site of Rav David Soloveitchik. I think it was just now. I think it was just today, maybe. Tomorrow. So I saw Rav Yitzchak Lichtenstein speaking in Brisk because he's a Talmud. So Rav David Soloveitchik passed away about a year ago. And in the yeshiva world, we always heard about his hasmada, right? That his ability to apply brisker Torah, his penetrating analysis, like Soloveitchiks are often known. Less known is that he davened a 45-minute Shemona Esrei. Three times a day. of 45 minutes Shmona Esrei. That he would only accept as many Talmidim into the yeshiva as he would have time and energy to daven for at the Kotel when he went once a month to daven for his Talmidim. He had to reject the Talmud from the yeshiva and say, why are you rejecting him? We could find a bed for him, we can make room for him. Yet there's room in the yeshiva, there's no room here. I need the capacity, the emotional capacity, to be mispalil for all of my Talmidim. That's the Mesorah of Elazhin. That's part of our Mesorah also. Let's not forget that depth of feeling, that passion that a Jew has, that sense that a Jew has for another Jew, and that connection to the Ribbono Shel Olam. We achieve it maybe not always with singing and dancing, maybe in other ways. You know, I heard someone recently who's someone who I admire very, very greatly, one of my great Rebbeim actually, say that, you know, in a room full of people that were singing and dancing, you know, there's always the chevra in the back that's not dancing. And he said, oh, Mashiach's going to come, and he's going to go to that chevra in the back, and he's going to say, no, you need to dance also. I'm not sure that that's the case. I think Mashiach might come, and he might say, and I'll see you in the Beis Medrash. Because you know where to find the Ribbono Shel Olam in different places also. Not everybody has to find the Ribbono Shel Olam in exactly the same way. We have a Mesorah of where to find the Ribbono Shel Olam also. And we develop that sense of passion and that sense of ahava, that sense of emotional energy that we build up in ourselves. That's part of our Mesorah. So the Netziv was the master of this. He knew how to look at a pasuk in Chumash where other people saw a question answer, and the Netziv knew how to uncover something. So what did the Netziv uncover in this pasuk? The Netziv answers that Ela mikan yesh lilmod de kol davar shebekedusha masha adam mechen atzmo yoser lezeh chal olav yoser ahechshor lezeh. The more one prepares to achieve kedusha, the more room there is for the kedusha to make the impact that it's meant to make. They began their preparation for tshuva and kedusha already in Rafidim, so that they will be muchsharim yoser lemaimer hanivchar alazeh. Says the Netziv, you cannot compare people who begin to prepare for an experience at the footstep, at the doorstep, at that moment of the experience, at Har Sinai, at Midbar Sinai, to people who are already mentally putting themselves in the shoes of those who are going to stand at the foot of Har Sinai already when they're in Rafidim. It's an entirely different experience. Someone who's already thinking Har Sinai thoughts, who's already thinking how he's going to connect to Torah, when he's in Rafidim, he has a different Har Sinai than someone who shows up to Har Sinai and says, this is awesome, I'm going to enjoy this, I'm going to connect to this. And then the Tziv proves this point from a Gemara in Bava Metzia Daf Pehei. Rabbi Chanina boasted to Rabbi Chia that he mishtachcha Torah miYisrael mahadarna la bilpulpuli. That if the Torah would be forgotten, I would have the capacity to bring it back with my koach apilpul. And Rabbi Chia responded that I did even better, because I saw to it that the Torah would never be forgotten. How did he see to it that the Torah would never be forgotten? Azilna v'shadina kisna v'gadilna nishvi. And he goes on and on. He says, I went and I planted flax and I prepared nets with that flax. And I trapped deer so that I could feed the meat to orphans and use the hide to prepare cloth, upon which I wrote chumashim. And then I went to a town and I taught 5 children, 1 chumash each. And I taught 6 others, 1 seder of Mishayas each. And then instructed them to teach each other the sections that I taught each of them. And that way, Torah was never going to be forgotten. And the Gemara comments, yeah, that's how you do it. The Gemara comments, Hainu Dama Rebbe, Kama Gedol Maisechia. How great are the Maisechia that he did such a thing. And the Tziv points out, I understand, if you need chumashim, go on Amazon, like one click, it'll be there tomorrow. You'll get chumashim. Right? Mishnayos too. You could, it will come by itself. It's very easy. You gotta go kill animals, set nets, and plant flax, and make nets, and set the nets, and kill the animals, and then set up all these chavrusas. Just buy the chumashim and teach them the Torah. Well, what's this whole maisa? What's this whole story? And the Netziv explains that if Torah is going to make an impact on the children, it's going to have the proper impact, then one has to put lev v'nefesh into every single step of the process. There are plenty of shortcuts. But shortcuts always produce an inferior product. There's nothing that replaces the experience of investing one's energy, investing one's efforts into something. You know, we started a night seder program in my shul recently. It wasn't our first try. we built a new building about a year ago. We moved in. So I said, right away, we've got to have a night seder. So I sent out an email. And I said, everyone's invited to night seder. And nobody came to night seder. There's one guy in my shul who's an absolute meshugana in the best possible way. He became a meshuga about night seder. He's not even like one of the bigger learners. I don't think he'd mind me saying. But he just became, he's absolutely, he calls me five times a day. Should we put out the black cherry soda in front of the ginger ale or the ginger ale? Like, the most crazy detailed questions. And he hocks everybody. And now there's 50 people learning at night with a Kol Torah. Because you have a Meshugno who's willing to put in all of that effort, all of that time, all of that energy. Nothing comes like that. You can't snap your fingers and make something happen. More people than ever before in history are learning Torah today. There's this all daf and all parsha and all mishnah. You have all everything. I'm hoping for an all halacha. But the level of amelus, particularly in the COVID era, has suffered tremendously. I've often said that I think that the success of online Torah in our community in particular is maybe a reflection of a great strength, but also a reflection of a certain weakness. It's a great strength because it shows that there's a yearning for Torah. It shows that there's a thirst for Torah. But it's also a reflection of a weakness, because the shiurim that we listen to are easy to listen to. You know why they're easy to listen to? Because it's a speaker speaking and everyone listening. You ever listen to like a yeshivisha shiur on one of those like yeshivisha apps? It's not an official app. It's not an official app. Whatever, you know. Like, you ever listen to yeshivisha shiur? There are guys hocking and yelling and screaming the whole time. It's like hard to listen to. But it's also how Torah is supposed to be experienced. It's also the way Torah is meant to be. That there's active participation, there's amelus, there are people that are working on something, there are people that care about something, that are investing energy into something. Because if you invest energy into it, then it becomes something. When we think of the power and the impact, let's say, of a Yom Noraim Tefillah, versus what often feels like just a standard davening throughout the year, there are many differences, but I think part of the difference, there are other factors also, but part of the difference is that people, especially Bali Tefillah, are super prepared for Yom Noraim. You ever look inside a Baal Tefillah's machzor in Yom Noraim? Like, he marks off, you know, which niggun he's going to sing at which spot. He has everything planned out. The Baal Tefillah Meshul, they prepare for months in advance. They go over throughout the summer. You see, I hear the guy already getting hoarse as it's 2 weeks away, and then he shuts down. He can't use his voice because he's got to get it back in time for Yom Noraim. There's so much preparation. How did Daniel just get up and daven? There are detailed notes. Tell them when to sing, when not to sing, when to speed up, when to slow down. They plan for every moment. It would be such a help if we did that all the time. Can you imagine what our tefillahs would be if every time there was a Baal Tefillah that got up on a Shabbos morning, that it wasn't just, not you, come on, someone, any. If there was someone that actually thought about it beforehand, that went to sleep Friday night thinking, okay, what's Kiddush going to sound like? It would be a different kind of davening. Of course it would be a different kind of davening. People would be thinking, how can I inspire the tzibur this week? Or maybe, if, you know, I don't know if this is a thing out here in Teaneck, but in the Five Towns there's a new thing that you have to walk to shul with a coffee in your hand. Maybe if we could finish the coffee at home and then walk to shul thinking about gearing ourselves toward davening. Maybe then it would be a different kind of davening. Rav Shechter Shlita often says, if you come to davening on time, you're already late. You got to come early. You have to get yourself in the mindset. He means it because no shul says Pesukei Dezimra slow enough that he could get all the words in. But you have to prepare yourself a little bit. Implicit in the comment of the Netziv is really another critical point. But yeah, Kabbalah Satorah has to be done while you're in the right frame of mind. Normally, we get ourselves into a new mindset when we arrive at a new place. You know, the first day of school, the first day at a new job. You know, those are times where we start fresh, we turn over a new leaf. The Jewish people naturally should have done their tshuva when they got to Midbar Sinai. That was a new page, it was a new place. But they started before day one. They didn't wait till they got there. If you know that the first day is coming and that you want it to be better, don't wait for the first day to make it better. Start earlier. You know, the Gemara Pesachim Daf Hei tells us that whenever the Torah says Rishon, with only three exceptions, it always means not the first of, but it means before. Such an unusual thing. What does Sheni mean? Sheni always means second, right? Doesn't it make sense that Rishon should mean first? It's such a weird thing, no? Sheni means second, but Rishon means before, the thing before. Well, why doesn't Rishon mean first? Maybe the Torah is teaching us that what happens on that first day should always, always start before. There's no reason to wait for the first day of next week to exercise or diet or whatever. Our firsts are usually so arbitrary anyway. There's no reason to wait for the first daf of Nu Masechta, the first, there's no reason. In last week's parsha, we read Moshe Rabbeinu instructed Yeshua, "Say hilachim ba'amalek, machar anochi nitzav al rosh hagiva, amata lukim biyadi." But the Darshi Rishuma say that you punctuate the pasuk a little differently. You could read, "Say hilachim ba'amalek, machar, go battle, go do battle with the Amalek." That's the attitude of machar, the Amalek in yourself. That's the attitude of doing things tomorrow, of doing things later on. You know, it's such a pashta thing that when it comes to accomplishing and learning, if Night Seder happens when Night Seder starts, Night Seder is not going to happen. Night Seder is a mindset. A person is working already. A person is doing something all day. They're busy with other things. It has to be that when you wake up in the morning, that's part of your daily plan. You wake up in the morning and there is a Night Seder that night. Oh, tonight is a Night Seder night. Tonight, when I get home, I'm going to eat a quick dinner. I'm going to do whatever I have to do. I'm going to go learn. Is it going to be easy? Not going to be easy, but that's what's on the schedule. It's what's on the agenda. If it's, I'll see how things go. We'll see where life takes me. Life will never take you here. Life will take you in a million different places. You will find a lot of different things to do. If you go with the flow, and that's what, it's not going to bring you to where you need to be. A person has to have a rishon. A person has to have beforehand. A person has to already be with Hirhuri Tshuva, already from Rafidim, before you get to Midbar Sinai. You know, it seems to be the particular heroism of Yisro. Mashmua Shama Uba. The entire world heard about Kriyas Yamsuf. Yisro wasn't unique in hearing about Kriyas Yamsuf. It wasn't a secret. You know, the Midrashim, everyone in the world, they took a glass of water and it split in their glass. I mean, they didn't realize. Everyone saw Kriyas Yamsuf. The whole world knew about Kriyas Yamsuf. He was the only one that was Shama Uba. Everyone else heard and said, Machar. Okay, we'll see how this thing plays out for the Jewish people tomorrow. We'll see where it takes me. We'll see if I'm still feeling it. But Yisro said, oh, right now. Mashmur Shama Uba. You have to come right now. It's like most things in life. It's not only about the action, it's a shift in mindset. A person, I was just talking to a Talmud of mine, not here, a guy reached out to me on Friday, and he said he's really struggling. He went to a graduate school, very intense graduate school, and he said that throughout graduate school, he knew he was going to have to work so, so hard. It was a very intense graduate school. And he worked really, really hard, and he kept on saying, okay, I'm going to learn when I finish graduate school and I'm working and I have normal hours and a normal job. And he said, I have normal hours, I have a normal job, and I'm just not learning. I can't figure it out. Why am I not learning? So the first question has to be, what's the game plan? It's not, I'm going to learn because I want to learn. It's got to be a plan. You have to have a rishon. The rishon has to be before you learn. There's got to be an approach. There's got to be a mahalich. There's got to be from the moment you wake up in the morning that you know where and when you're going to be learning that day. There's always going to be a million things in life that distract us. But we know where to find the Ribbono Shel Olam. We know where to find that connection to the Ribbono Shel Olam. We know where to find that energy and that excitement in our Yiddishkeit. We know that you can find it here in the Beis Medrash, and that even if you need a little extra help of inspiring yourself with either different types of svarim or with different types of events to inspire yourself, those are good and helpful. They're good and helpful because they bring you back here. That's why they're helpful, because this is where it's at. This is where you encounter the Dvar Hashem. This is where you encounter the Ribbono Shel Olam himself, and this is where we encounter Be'ezras Hashem, a full, meaningful life.